A typical architecture of a field bus is shown in slide 80. And following the classic and theoretical ISO-OSI model, we see that only three of the possible seven layers are implemented, namely the application layer, the data link layer, and the physical layer. The levels 3, 4, 5, and 6 are not explicitly implemented, except some minimal functions that often are included in the application layer or in the data link layer. In some solutions, instead, they require the implementation of a new intermediate level specific for that kind of field bus. Now we can ask to ourselves how to evaluate the quality of the communication. And what parameters can provide us a concrete evaluation of this? One term is the so-called efficiency. For example, we could consider a good indicator of the performance of a field bus, the so-called throughput, tau, that is the product of the maximum velocity of the transmission that can be sent on the communication media on the basis of the particular protocol that we have chosen, time the efficiency, that is the percentage, the ratio between the total amount of information that is sent from a sender to a destination point with respect the real content of the data exchange that would be necessary to be communicated between the two interlocutors. In other words, if we consider slide 81, we see in slide 81 we have clearly an example, but we see that due to the constraints and the specifics of the communication protocol that we are considering, the amount of the data that travel on a communication media is often very high compared to the real content of the communication. In the example shown in slide 81, we have, for example, that user data that is exchanged between a sender and a receiver, and whose amount is 4 bytes, 32 bits, is equipped, let's say, with a preamble that is a signal that says to the destination point that a communication is going to start, then a real start of message, then an address that could indicate, for example, the destination point that should receive the data that we are sending. Then a service that can specify, for example, the kind of specific activity requested to the data link layer, and the type of the message that we are sending in a context of a general communication. And then after the user data, a frame check sequence like a cyclic redundancy code, and finally a end group of bits. The example shown demonstrates that with a 1 byte preamble plus 4 bit start, with 2 bytes corresponding to the address of the destination node and the service and the type of message sent, together with a couple of bytes for the frame check sequence and 4 bit for the physical conclusion, let's say, of the message that we are sending, the frame efficiency in this case is 33%, again considering 4 byte data sent from the sender to the destination point, since the remaining group of data that are sent together the user data but that don't are real information exchanged correspond more or less to 8 further bytes of data that are communicated. Another parameter that allows to evaluate the quality of the performance provided by a field bus is the so-called medium access control policy. A MAC policy is related to the fact that many devices can make access at the same time to the same transmission medium. Of course, this can create conflicts and can compromise the correctness of the data exchange. In the slide 82, we have three possible groups of techniques that can be implemented and fundamental to allow that the data traffic respects the required time constraint. In other words, some of the policies that we will describe are deterministic, so are very interesting from the real-time communication point of view, some others not. Typically, the medium access control is implemented at the data link layer and differentiates the field buses on the basis of, as I already said, three possible policies: centralized, distributed, and multiple. In the centralized approach, one node is more important than the others and assigns the control of the communication to the different connected station on a time-by-time basis, exploiting suitable algorithms that are defined at the configuration of the overall communication. Typically, centralized policies are master-slave or bus-arbiter. A distributed MAC control implies that many, if not all, the stations can assume the transmission mode control on the basis of a token passing criterion or a time domain multiple access approach. And finally, the multiple MAC control is a policy into which all the nodes can transmit at the same time, but the difference between the different approaches is in the conflict management. We can distinguish in the multiple medium access control policies the so-called carrier sense multiple access with collision detection, collision avoidance, collision resolution, or bus arbitration. To go a little bit more into the details, we can say that in case of master-slave MAC policy, a unique station called master is authorized to spontaneously transmit. The other nodes can answer on the basis of a cyclic interrogation executed by the master that follows a predefined schedule. We are using in this case a polling list, or a dynamic list that is traffic sensitive. Every slave, when asked by the master, will provide data or eventually asks for a service. The advantage is clearly a deterministic traffic control with upgrade times that are assured. On the other hand, the drawback is clearly a very strict policy into which only those nodes that have been at the beginning considered in the list are involved in the communication. Bus arbiter or link active scheduler, into which a unique station is the communication arbiter that controls a network of nodes configured as information producers or consumer. Every variable is identified by its proper name and is required by the arbiter onto the bus, following a scheduling table dynamically managed. The producer node will put its own variable onto the bus at every call, while the consumer node will read that variable at every transmission of itself. The arbiter can temporarily distribute the control to other nodes to support different communication modes, like client-server. In any case, once more, we have a deterministic traffic control with very, very strict and predetermined times for the upgrading assured. Just to better clarify the concept, in slide 84, we have a picture that shows a list of variables that are known in advance to the bus arbiter. They are called A, B, C, J, temp, XXX. The bus arbiter will put on the network at every time the name of each variable that is in its own list. For example, the bus arbiter will write on the bus the name of the variable A. In other words, A is identified by a suitable code or a suitable number that is recognized by all the other nodes in the network. Then the bus arbiter will put on the network the identification of B, of C, etc., up to the end of the list. Not only this, because typically the bus arbiter knows also the times with which each variable must be refreshed. And since it is not said that every variable must be upgraded with the same periodicity, we have also in the picture shown in slide 85 the times, the periods, with which it is necessary to ask for the new version, the new acquisition of each variable. 5, let's say, seconds for the variable A, 10 for the variable B, 10 for the variable C, 15 for J, 20 for temp, 30 for XXX. This means that we have a general photo of the knowledge information we need to have the complete control of the process, and we have also an idea of the temporal periodicity we need for those variables. Another picture shows the sequence in time of the variables called by the bus arbiter and how they are refreshed. For example, the bus arbiter will put on the network the identification of the variable A. This happens, we said, every 5 seconds. The variable A is produced by one of the partners connected to the network at a certain moment, maybe the bus arbiter itself or maybe someone else. So the producer, that is the node in the network that, for example, could acquire that variable from a sensor, maybe elaborate it and more and more, will write the value of the variable so as it is available to all the nodes connected in that moment to the network. Then we will follow the same protocol, let's say, for the variable B, for the variable C, for J, for temp, and then for XXX. Variable after variable, the identification of that variable is written onto the network, and the node that produces that information will make it available to all the other nodes. After 5 seconds, we have the next cycle, but in the next cycle we need only to refresh A because the periodicity of the other variables is greater with respect to this one. A must be upgraded every 5, B and C every 10, j every 15, x, x, x every 30, temp every 20. And the third picture shown in slide 85 shows exactly this concept. We have also said about such a kind of approach that we need to foresee the possibility of aperiodic communications. This is a requirement that every field bus should satisfy. Such a kind of policy allows to have time for doing this, because the snapshot that the bus arbiter has is related to a set of variables that are known in advance and must be kept upgraded with a suitable periodicity. When we can satisfy the aperiodic communications, because all the variables that we have seen now are periodic communication. The answer is in the time that every cycle lives before performing the next cycle of request. For example, looking at the list shown in the slide 84, we see the variable list with the overall periodicity, and we have, for example, that the duration of the overall operations could be 0.2 seconds for each one of the variables that are listed in this picture. Clearly, this is a strong hypothesis, because to ask a variable and to read the variable from the network need time, and this time is related to the size of the variable. So maybe that making the hypothesis that the time is equal for all the variables is not exactly right, but just to make an example. The overall time necessary for the upgrading of all the variables, in the worst case that we need to refresh all of them, is therefore 1.2 seconds. And since the minimum cycle time is 5, this allows us 3.8 seconds into which, if necessary, we can allow aperiodic communications to raise up, let's say, their request, and accordingly to the remaining time to satisfy them. This, on the other hand, limits the complexity of the requirements that are made through these aperiodic communications that must be sized accordingly to the time left in every cycle. In other words, if one could think that aperiodic communications can arrive in a free way, this is not completely true. And the protocol that the bus arbiter must follow to satisfy such a kind of communications is quite complex and is out of the scope of this course. The distributed control, as we said, consists in a token passing concept or in a time domain multiplexed access. In the first case, the access to the bus is reserved to the station, that is called master gain, that holds a suitable token. A token is a particular frame of data exchanged among the station and recognized and defined at the beginning of the configuration of the network. The token is held until a suitable maximum time expires or until the communication ends. In such a way, we have carried out a ring topology among the nodes that exchange the token with a fixed token rotation time. And if the token acquisition time is constant within TRT, a time-locked token rotation is performed. Otherwise, this policy is called free running token rotation. In slide 86, we show the difference between the two distributed token passing policies. It is clear that in the first approach, we have a very, let's say, deterministic instant of time into which every task will take the token and will be executed. For example, the task M0, the task M1, and the task M2 in the first sequence of execution work sequentially. The longest task in that case is the M01. M1 is a little bit shorter, M2 is very short. In the second case considered, M0 is a little bit longer, M1 is a little bit shorter, M2 is a little bit longer again. But to every one, a fixed interval of time is assigned within which the considered process must end its communication. Clearly, I repeat, from the deterministic point of view, from the real-time point of view, this is a good choice because we know exactly when every task starts, and we know that at least it will take the time fixed by the instant into which it has to pass the communication, the token, to the next one. This means that the algorithm is deterministic if the duration of every interval has been correctly estimated at the beginning during the configuration of the network, because if a task doesn't conclude its own communication within that interval, clearly the communication will be restarted in the next interval, but the real time will be not respected. Another drawback of such a policy is that the time is not exploited completely. We have intervals of time into which the bus is idle. The free running policy, conversely, shows a better way to use the time, we could say, because a task will take the token and will release it to the next one in the list when it has finished, and in any case within a certain maximum interval. In the lower part of the slide at 85, we clearly understand that within a maximum rotation time, there is no instance of time, no intervals of time into which the bus is idle, if, of course, we identify correctly a good dimension of the rotation time to avoid that too short tasks are included into the interval that don't completely fill it and therefore spread the available time. The time domain multiplexed access principle is basically another distributed MAC policy that defines a cycle time within which all the nodes must have the possibility for performing their communication. Within the cycle, every node has a suitable time window to be the bus master. It is a similar mechanism as the token passing time locked without the token, so there is a little bit less overhead in this case, where every station knows its proper time since it has a clock synchronous with the bus one. And now let's come to the last policy for the medium access control, that is called carrier sense multiple access. In this approach, all the network nodes can send data at the same time. And if the transmission medium is not occupied, This means that we have the possibility of collisions. Collisions can be managed adopting four different approaches. The first is the so-called collision detection, into which when nodes collide, the transmission is suspended. The collided messages are deleted from the medium and they will be retransmitted. This is the main drawback of such an approach that, on the other hand, is very simple. The retransmission of the messages, the disruption of the messages themselves. The transmission will resume after a certain time that will be generated by a timer internal to the microprocessor, to the node that manages the network, and that is random but equal for all the nodes. So the probability of new collisions is related to the network load and to the number of the nodes connected to the network. In other words, if the load is not constant, this could be a good policy, because in a certain moment we have many nodes with many informations that must be exchanged. So waiting a certain time, it could be a good idea. But if, let's say, the problem is deterministic, clearly such a kind of an approach will fail. The second approach is called collision avoidance, and it is similar to the previous one, because the waiting time before retransmitting the data is randomly generated, but is different in every node. In other words, we don't have a unique quantity generated by a timer that is common to all the nodes, but every one generates its own, let's say, stop interval. And clearly, this could represent a one step beyond in terms of improvement with respect to the previous approach. But again, if the problem is constant, even in this case, we are not, let's say, efficient in solving the collision. Moreover, messages are disrupted also in this case. In the third approach, called the collision resolution, a priority is assigned to each node during network configuration. Collided messages will be deleted, again, like in the previous ones. The transmission will resume after an inactivity time that is related to the priority assigned to the node or to the message. In this sense, the collision resolution technique is similar to collision avoidance, but the waiting time is not randomly generated, because it is computed on a priority base, and this assures that when the transmission will resume, not all the nodes that previously collided will try to communicate again. So we have more chances to go ahead with the communication and to avoid the previously occurring collisions. The last one is the so-called bus arbitration. Again, a priority is assigned to each node during the network configuration, and the transmission will resume when the transmission medium is not occupied. But if there is a collision, only the transmission node with the priority higher with respect to the others will continue. The other nodes will resume their transmissions when the higher priority transmissions end. This is completely done at the level of the electronic circuits that manage the communication, so we don't have any disruption of messages, but simple when the first part of the message is put on the network, the electronic circuit will keep in transmission the node number that is the higher present in that moment into the network itself. The figure shown in slide 88 tries to clarify such a kind of concept. We have three nodes, the number 1, the number 3 and the number 7, and they try at the same time to put a message onto the network. The first character that they write is a start of message or a start of header that is equal for all of them. So the electronic circuit that will manage the communication don't raise any problem because the same value is put onto the network. But now, when each one will try to write the identifier, for example 1, 3 and 7, this will make the difference, and this will allow only the highest priority one to continue, while the other two will stop their communication. In other words, the electronic circuits are organized so as physically onto the line only the codification of the lowest number, the lowest identifier that is written, survives, while the other simply are not written. It is better to say that they are not accepted. Every node will look at the network, and in particular, after writing every part of the message, it will control if its own content has survived or not. If, for example, the number 3 writes 3 and sees that onto the network it remains the number 1, this is enough for it to understand that it has lost the arbitration, so it is necessary to stop the communication. About the identifiers, we have to be more precise. They could represent the order number of the node that is involved into the communication, but they could also represent a identifier that is related to the type of the message that is written. So we can establish priorities both in terms of nodes, important or less important, but also in terms of messages that are mandatory or less critical for the network. But this is a standard that is implemented into the CAN bus. So we will come back later in the course to specify better the details, in particular concerning the electronic circuits that manage such a kind of priority-based bus resolution.